Hey everybody, and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dacchio, and today my guest is Kelly Scalata. He's a writer now at the Step Back on Fansided's network. He's also on writer for FanRag. He's a contractor for Bleacher Report. Basically, you probably read his stuff at some point or another. Today, we're just going to get into the Western Conference, really focusing in on the Warriors and the Rockets, and we're going to get it going. Kelly, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Mo?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. I'm getting ready. We're down to like the last 10 or 9 games, and I'm getting ready. I'm getting excited for playoff basketball.
Man, that season just goes by so fast, doesn't it?
Oh, it's a blink, man. It's you know. There wasn't even dog days this year. I felt like everything this year was just real. Every day was very interesting one way or another.
Well, you know, Houston and Toronto are in the top seeds, and just like we thought they would.
Yeah, I mean, this was what we all predicted.
they're ruining basketball for everybody.
Just not fun. I'll tell you what does ruin basketball is injuries. And the Warriors have about a bunch of them. It's almost like their whole team is injured. Well, their big four basically is. How worried are you about the Warriors at this point?
Up until I learned that Steph was going to be out for the first round, I was not worried. Now I think things get a lot more interesting. Kevin Durant might be the best player on that team, but Stephen Curry is the most important player on that team. And I know that's a distinction some people might struggle with making, but I think smart basketball people 100% understand the difference between those two things. The offense is built around Curry. It functions best when Curry's in it. You look at the on-off ratings, I think it's inarguable that Curry just has the biggest impact on that team. Everyone shoots better when he's on the court because of the gravity and space he provides. And, you know, if they run into a defensive juggernaut like the Jazz, even, it could be a lot more troublesome for them than we would have thought come, you know, in the preseason, especially the way the Jazz are playing.
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz defensively are phenomenal. That's an important distinction. I kind of want to go and dig a little bit into about the Curry and KD thing, because you're right, and I kind of want to help the not the super basketball fans kind of just get that distinction a little bit better. But basically what we're saying is everybody tends to play better when Curry's on the court, because you have to pay Curry that extra attention than you do KD. And it's not a knock on KD. It's not saying anything about KD's game. It's just the amount of attention that goes to when Curry's on the court, you know, and you use the great word of gravity, and he just does sort of draw people to him, and it opens up the floor even more, which is something that we're just not used to having, you know, seeing on a team like that. And I think that's a very important distinction with those two guys. The one thing about the Warriors, that's funny to me about this, with all the injuries and everybody beginning to kind of doubt them, you know, whether they'll be all right in the first round or anything like that. That feeds into them, I think. And I think for those guys, listen, they haven't played inspired basketball all season. They haven't looked motivated. I almost feel like everybody kind of doubting them sort of puts that in play, where it kind of lets them develop a chip on their shoulder starting game one of the playoffs. You know, not that I'm saying they'll miraculously all of a sudden be better and everything like that. Obviously, they have a lot of health issues. But if they have KD, Draymond, and Klay out there, and I feel like, especially Draymond, if Draymond feels like there was disrespect in the leading up to the end of the season, I could see them kind of just going off. You know,
I mean, like, there's clearly another gear they have,
and
it's not like Kevin Durant is just some scrub that they picked up off the waiver wire. They have, you know, arguably the second best player in the world. And they can certainly win games without Steph. So, there's these things that I look at, and I don't know, is this an inspired thing, or is it a regression thing, or, you know, like Dre has not shot well this year.
Right.
Iggy has shot pretty badly this year. You know, they're just not that great of an offense without Steph on the court, and it's really kind of surprising how average they are. considering the amount of talent they have. And I don't know how much of that you ascribe to just lethargy and how much of it is just they don't have all the pieces in place that they need to make everything run smoothly. If it's just Steve Kerr for a minute, you know, a lot of people have said things like, well, I think, you know, Mark Jackson would have done the same thing, but this whole offense, the way it runs, not just the pace and space, but the passing and the way that everybody just plays off of one another. It's beautiful. It's phenomenal. But when you take out the most important piece of that, it's like they just seem to struggle figuring out how to make it all work. And so there's this kind of combination of how much of it is just, you know, they're not inspired. They've been to the last three finals. They're expecting to get to their fourth straight. And people have been saying, well, you know, like about LeBron and the Cavs, that they're just kind of coasting through the regular season. And the same thing is a perfectly valid thing to say about the Warriors. So I think that there's a measure that is lethargy, and I think there's a measure of it that is just struggling to figure out how to play without Steph.
Right.
And we don't really know until they play a meaningful game without Steph how much of it is winch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's a big thing too. Like we won't really know, like you said, till the first game of the playoffs. Really, like there's no more meaningful games. They're locked into the two seed. There's not. I mean, it would be a drastic. I don't even think the Jazz or Portland can catch them. So, Portland can't catch them. They're 9 games behind them in the loss column. Like, there's no way they're catching them. They're locked in the 2 seed. We're not going to get to see that kind of urgency until that game, and that's where it's – and even then, we're still waiting for, you know, KD, although there was some video today of him shooting with Steve Nash, but, you know, cracked ribs are still a thing. You know, Draymond has an assortment of injuries from his shoulder to his pelvis and God knows what else. We're still waiting for Klay to come back from, you know, a broken hand, which is his shooting hand, which is still something you got to keep your eye on. But if they come back, I feel like, and if Curry comes back and they make it to the second round and they're healthy, like, I think things get really interesting there for them. But I think these dudes, for me, every year, that first year, nobody expected them to win the championship. They won it. They go into the offseason and everybody's talking about how lucky they were with injuries. Doc gave them a great quote, you know, bulletin board material and all of that. And then, you know, they ripped off 73 games. Granted, they lose, but they're still motivated the next year. And next year they get KD and they really want to win it for KD. And now we're here. And it's just kind of like there was no real storyline to keep them motivated to have that drive. So I think they can manufacture this a little bit, but I think if they just start looking at everybody down them, I think we might see a more driven Warriors off of everybody doubting them, in the playoffs, and let alone they've been waiting for the playoffs since October.
And whether or not they can just shift into another gear on the spur of the moment with everybody sitting out all of this time, and you know how quickly can they get the chemistry back and stuff? It's going to be interesting. I think there's still like a 85% chance that they win in the first round, but there's a sliver of a chance now that they don't get out of it.
Right. I mean it's definitely a chance, and you know it's all going to come down to Curry's MCL and how that feels. But let's shift a little bit, and let's just go, you know, let's just ask the question. Is this the Rockets' year? I mean, it's all kind of lining up. You know, Golden State with all these injuries. You know, San Antonio doesn't have Kawhi. If they play Jimmy Butler in Minnesota in the first round, he's coming back from an MCL tear. You know, it seems like it's all kind of lining up for, you know, James Harden and Chris Paul to take it and come away with a ring.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing. This is this had a stretch where they were 2-7, and they had like a bunch of injuries stacked on top of each other over that stretch. That is in no way a real test of the Rockets any more than the way the Warriors are playing right now is a real test to the Warriors. But if you take the rest of the season, remove those 9 games from the Rockets, and they're 58-7. That is, you know, like as far as the winning percentage goes, that's equivalent to a 73 win season. Their net rating over that time frame is like, I published an article on FanRag about this today, but I think it was like plus 11 per game. The margin of victory was somewhere around there too. They have 114 offensive rating, 102.9 defensive rating. They are really, 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 really good. I mean, they are, you know, like the Warriors are historically great, and they're the reigning champs, and that's why everybody expects them to win if they're healthy. But the Rockets are historically great too. What they're doing is phenomenal. They're I think 39-2 with their big three in the lineup. They're, what is it, I think now 42-4 with Paul and Harden. I mean, they're putting up wins and efficiency ratings and playing as well as the 2015-16 Warriors did. The healthy Rockets are literally and provably playing as well as any team in history. You know, on that level, they're on the level of those Warriors. They're on the level of the 72 win Bulls when they're healthy. So my concern about this is like, yeah, the path is clear for them right now, as clear as it's going to get. It seems like they're, you know, with Kawhi out and with Steph injury and with the chaos in Cleveland, that everything is kind of this is their year. And but what I hope doesn't happen is that they win it all and then people say it's because Kawhi was out, it's because the Warriors were healthier, it's because of the, you know, I feel like people are going to start throwing shade on it as though the Rockets weren't really good enough to win without all of this chaos. So anyway, I hope the Warriors are back. I want to see that clash of titans. I want to see a fully healthy Warriors and a fully healthy Rockets in a 7-game series, because one, that will be as entertaining as any series we've ever seen. And number two, whoever wins, like, they're going to have the claim of having beaten the other team. So that'll remove any doubt as to who deserves to win. I think the East is almost irrelevant at this point.
Yeah, it's the Western Conference Finals.
Whoever comes out of the West is going to win.
Yeah,
whoever, no offense, Toronto.
You know, it really does feel like the Western Conference Finals is the finals. Let me ask you this question. How do you feel if both teams are healthy? Who do you give the edge to? So that's a long pause.
Yeah, because, all right, here's my thought. I think it's going to be the Rockets, and I'm trying to talk myself out of saying something stupid.
Oh, don't talk yourself out. Say something stupid on the pod. Come on, that's what podcasts are for.
I think that there are two games where both the Rockets and the Warriors were healthy. They were good games, and the Rockets were just better. You know, down the stretch in both games, the Rockets were just better. One was in Golden State on opening night. The other was in Houston later in the season. And then, you know, there was another game, I think, I forget who wasn't in it. It was either Paul or Harden. One of the two was missing. So the Warriors won a game where one of their point guards was out. But the games where they were both teams were essentially healthy, The Rockets won, and they won down the stretch. They won in those clutch minutes when the death lineup is supposed to mean everything, and when the Rockets are supposed to be collapsing because Harden and Paul are chokers, and so on and so forth. And it just, this Rockets team is different. They make defensive plays down the stretch. You know, some of these games that they've won, like when they won in Utah, they won just by shutting down the Jazz in the second half. They've won games in the clutch with their defense. And like Chris Paul, his true shooting percentage in the clutch this year is like 80%, Mo. It's just crazy.
You don't have to sell me on Chris Paul.
What's that? Oh, yeah. You're kind of familiar with that guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I have a little experience.
And I mean, like, when he's your bailout option, that's almost criminal.
Yeah. I mean, but
for when the top 5 point guard in the history of mankind is your bailout option, that's almost criminal.
Yeah, I mean that's an unbelievable second option. But for me, I'm the other way around it though, Kelly. Like, I get what they did in the regular season. I get what the Rockets did against the Warriors when both teams were healthy, regular season wise and whatnot. I just don't think that's the Warriors team that we would see in the conference finals. Like, for me, if they're fully healthy, and I'm not sure they'll be 100% healthy even if they get to the conference finals. So that's still a big question. I don't see a way that Houston can beat these guys 4 out of 7. Because Western Conference Finals, those guys are going to be locked in. We're not going to see the laziness and the almost apathetic way in which the Warriors were playing this year. And it maybe lazy isn't a way to say it, but the right word. But it's more just like, the drive wasn't there. And now that we're finally in the playoffs, like, I think we would see that more. And I think listen, when the Warriors want to be, when they want to do it, they can be the best defensive team to, you know, in the NBA. It's not really a thing of, like, I know their numbers are down this year, but again, it just goes back to, I don't think they cared that much in the regular season. I think it was more just like, we just got to get there. And you know, for me, maybe it's, I got to see it done before I buy into it. But I just don't think the Rockets still play one way. It's still a lot of ISO basketball, and a lot of that plays into that Warriors defense. Like, that's what they want. They want you to play ISO basketball against them. They will load up on you, and even when it gets to Chris Paul, they got enough good defenders that they can, you know, they can handle that. Most teams can't, and that's kind of what makes the Rockets so difficult on a regular basis. And to me, with the Rockets only playing one way, to me that's kind of a regular season way to win games, but it's a hard thing to do in the playoffs, you know, and that's something like, you know, I actually really need to go back and watch D'Antoni's playoffs in Phoenix and whatnot, because I need to, you know, my feeling on it, and I have to go do the research on it, but my feeling is he doesn't make a lot of playoff adjustments. He doesn't really change that much game to game. We saw it last year in the playoffs with the Rockets in San Antonio, and it was before Hard, you know, quote unquote, hard and quit. You know, I just didn't see any really great adjustments he made to how the Spurs were playing them defensively, and that's a big question for me. You know, like, that's my big concern, is like, he's just gonna keep saying, let's just keep doing it this way. We got it. It's gonna work. Don't worry. We just got to do it better. And to me, that's where I'm like, that's where you lose me.
Well, I think that there's a. We got to make a little bit of a distinction here. Mm-hmm. And just, yes, they play ISO basketball. But when I hear people talk about that, it's like when people would say a jump shooting team can't win 3 years ago. The Warriors redefined what a jump shooting team is.
Right.
The Rockets are redefining ISO basketball. It's not at all the same type of ISO that Kobe Bryant used to run, for instance. And I think one of the big differences is there's a much more, the way that Harden and Paul run it, it's unselfish. The emphasis is as much on passing out the three-point shooters as trying to drive to the basket. And there's not nearly as many of these kind of, you know, drive-in, bounce, 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 bounce the ball, and then do a post-up type thing. Or, you know, step back, mid-range jumpers, and those types of things. I just feel like, yes, it's ISO basketball, but it's not the same kind of ISO basketball.
I'm gonna push back a little bit, because I agree with you. The Warriors have changed, you know, the perception that a jump shooting team can't win it, and I know ISO basketball can win it. You know, it's won it in the past. I mean that's what really 90s and 2000 basketball was. And this is, as you're right, a very different ISO basketball than what we've seen. But at the same time, this is more the ball movement era to me. And you know, they are succeeding despite ball movement, and that's because they have James Harden and Chris Paul. But, like, what happens when he doesn't get the calls? Because they swallow the whistle a lot more, you know, and he doesn't get to the free throw line more and things like that. It's hard for me. Like, I just don't buy into it. I don't buy into
it. There's an article I read recently, and I can find the link. But it was explaining – And there was some good video breakdown in there too. The Rockets, they don't pass as much, but they pass more efficiently. Like the way that they play is different than the Warriors, but a lot of it is the same kind of results. Like I get that, you know, like there's like the Warriors or the Spurs that beat the Cavaliers, where there's this kind of this ball movement mentality, and you know, you're passing more and scoring more, and the Raptors have adapted to that amazingly. The Wizards, even for a while, they were winning just by passing more without John Wall. So I get that. You know, all that passing is supposed to create 3-point opportunities, right?
Right.
And open lanes so that you can get to the rim. Well, Aren't the Rockets getting those?
They are, but I think come playoff time against a healthy Warriors, I don't think they get as many as those. I think that was the thing, you know, last year. Listen, the Spurs did a great job of defending the 3-point line and defending the layups and saying, you guys got to live in mid-range. And they didn't, and they really struggled in that. They didn't, I don't even know how many mid-range shots they took. It's got to be somewhere between like 10 or lower. And they just kept trying to finish over the big guys in space, and then the Spurs had enough defenders on the wings to really challenge those 3-point shooters. Now, granted, this Rockets team is way more potent than last year's team, but again, also now we're counting on guys like Tucker to hit threes in the playoffs, you know, and Ariza, who's had playoff success, but still, like, these are guys, Umba Amute, who it's like, as a coach, when I'm game planning, I'm like, I'm letting those dudes shoot the three. Like,
you're just sitting there talking about not being able to shoot mid-range shots, and there's this guy named Chris Paul. You may have heard of him.
Yeah, no, of course. Of course, but I almost...
That was one of the reasons they got him.
But that, right? That's my big concern, though, Kelly, is that they've almost changed him. It's almost like, this is going to be a very nerdy reference, but this is a... Star Trek cyborg thing, or next thing you know, he's one of them. He's no longer that mid-range guy.
but if you watch them, you know, like I watch most of the Rockets
right.
games, and there's a lot, like he shoots a lot more threes than D'Antoni. You're right, they have changed him for the better. I think his true shooting percentage is at a career high. I'm not positive on that, but if it's not at a career high, it's close to it. Mm-hmm. They do calculated mid-range shots, and even Harden is starting to do more of those. To where, when that's happening, when what you're talking about is happening, to where they're chasing them off the 3-point line and cutting off the rim, both Harden and Paul are pulling up and just hitting these little bunnies from 6, 8, 10 feet out, and they're just knocking them down. And so I think they take those when they're necessary, and that to me is the optimal use of mid range. Have I ever told you about my well vomit theory of mid range shooting?
No, please. I want to hear this one.
Okay, I think it's called ambergenesis or something like that. Ambergesis.
Okay.
I can't remember the exact word for it, but it's well won. And I learned this from reading Encyclopedia Brown when I was a kid. But back in the day, they used whale vomit. It's got this really, really super strong stench to it. It's like one of the strongest smelling things in the world. And what they do is they use a tiny, they don't do it anymore, but they used to use a tiny bit amount of it in perfume. Because the odor was so strong that when you added like the flowers and the, you know, all the pleasant scents to it, it would just serve as a magnifier for all the pleasant smells. But you just needed that little bit of stink to make everything else stand out and smell good.
Right.
So that's my theory. Mid-range shots are whale vomit. You need a little tiny bit of it to get everything else to really work perfectly.
I can go with you on that. I'm definitely, you know, I want the best shot possible. And to me, if it's instead of taking a contested three, I'm going to get an open two. That's the shot I want. It being mid range, I'm fine with that. So I actually think that's a great analogy, although. You know, the image in my head is not all that great of whale vomit, but I think that's a great analogy. But I think we're just going to have to beg to differ. I really think they're going to – I think if the – again, this is if the Warriors are healthy. Because I think if they're not healthy, if they're not 100%, I think the Rockets got them. I think – and this is the Rockets' year. You know, if the Warriors go into that series beat up and limping – It's the Rockets, and it won't even be close. But
but you're gonna make Chris sad, though. I think you should know that.
Chris should be happy. He got to the conference finals. he's gone further than he's ever gone. Why would he be sad? I get it. For me, with Chris. The debate for me is it never matters to me where he goes in the playoffs. If he never makes it out of the second round, I still think he's one of the best to play the game. And I don't care. Anybody wants to at me or whatever, that's fine. I got the mute and block button on the ready. I don't care. He's one of the best.
I was just looking this up yesterday. You know who has a higher postseason per than Chris Paul?
You had kicked out those stats. Tell that. I saw that. You tweeted it out. Please.
Yeah. Four players have a higher postseason per than Chris Paul. Michael Jordan, what's his name? The old Lakers center from the 50s.
Mikan?
Yeah, Mikan, LeBron James, and who was the other one? Oh, Shaquille O'Neal.
That's it.
That's it. That's the whole list right there. That's everybody that's had better playoffs than Chris Paul. So people that want to blame Chris Paul for not getting past the second round just need to shut up.
Anytime people want to talk about that, you know, and his failings in the playoffs, that's fine. It's more of a struggle of the team, but like people forget that game 7 against San Antonio where he pulled his hamstring and still hit the game winner. You know,
yeah.
And they want to point to the next round where they lose 3-1 to the Rockets. I go, he wasn't healthy. I mean, he pulled his hamstring in game 7.
Like, and you know what's funny? They use that series to prove that both Chris Paul and James Harden are chokers.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to me. I mean, the whole thing and the concept of this is the problem, right? Is you're a choker until you do it. Right? You can't do it until you can do it. And we're going to ride you and ride you and ride you till you do it. And I think it's a foot law.
Tragic Johnson.
Right.
You know, then there was, after Tragic Johnson finally won, then Michael Jordan was never going to win because he was too selfish and scoring champions never win titles. Right.
Right.
Then after that, it was, for a while, Shaquille O'Neal couldn't win.
Right.
Then Kobe Bryant couldn't win without Shaquille. Then LeBron James couldn't win. Remember when LeBron James was a quitter?
Right. I mean, it's just a thing. Like, this is just, it's ridiculous that we do this to these guys. Yeah.
Nobody ever won until they won.
Right. So, you know, everybody starts out with a zero before they win a championship. So that's just kind of the deal. But I'll tell you what, you can be a winner every time if you live in L.A., Kelly, because I know the best gelato place in all the land. Okay? I'm telling you, in all the land, as far as I could see, this is the best gelato I've ever had. Okay? And I'm talking about Gelateria Uli's. They have two locations. They have one in downtown in the Spring Arcade in between 5th and 6th Street on Spring. And they have a second location, which is in the Beverly Grove area, which I know doesn't matter if you don't live in L.A., but it's near the Beverly Grove. It's on 3rd and Crescent Heights, I believe, which I haven't gotten to that location yet, but I'm coming soon. So they better be ready for me, and they better have my Speculoos cookies ready to roll because I love that flavor. And they have amazing flavors left and right. You can't go wrong. Gelateria Uli's, you're a winner every time. You've won a championship when you have Gelateria Uli's. That day, you're a champion. I'm telling you that much right now. Let's look at we talked a lot about the Rockets and the Warriors. Let's look at the and I'm going to skip the Blazers because they're in the top three. But what team besides the top three do you think can pull off an upset? I would say top four, but we don't even know who's going to be the four seed.
Yeah.
I'll start out and give.
Of course, it all depends on the matchup.
Right.
Go ahead. Start. Yeah.
I'll give you the two teams I would be worried about if I'm going to match up against them in the playoffs. I would be concerned if I'm playing Utah just because how damn good they are defensively. And they are unreal. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but you know, despite however many games he missed, Rudy Gobert could still win Defensive Player of the Year. That's how damn good they are on the defensive end. And you never know. Rookies in the playoffs, you don't know, but Donovan Mitchell has been amazing all year. And the shots he hit in that San Antonio-Utah game to force overtime, they eventually lost. But the two threes he hit in over, you know, to get there, I was just like, God damn. They got a lot of playmakers with Rubio and Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles is the unsung hero of that team. You know, I think he does a lot for that team both on both ends of the court and doesn't get a lot of credit for it. But I think that's one team I'd be concerned about. And the other team I'd be worried about is Oklahoma City. I don't care. I don't care how they've played. They still have, you know, two stars in Russell Westbrook and Paul George. They have a third up-and-comer in Steven Adams, you know. And Melo can hit a shot here and there, although he didn't in whatever game they lost on Sunday that they probably should have won. I think they have just enough talent. Like, that's a team to me I always thought would have problems in the regular season but be a tough outcome playoff time because they potentially have two guys that could be the best player in a series.
Yeah, I am going to disagree with you on OKC.
That's fine.
I think, like, are we talking about, they might be able to beat Portland. But of the three, I don't think they're going to beat Houston or Golden State. I don't think they really have much of a chance.
Right.
Because, you know, especially if Golden State's healthy. Because Russell Westbrook is the best player on their team, if we say he is.
Right.
You know, that makes sense. He's the second best player on the court against either of those teams, at best. You know?
Yeah, but you have...
He might not even be the second best player on the court against either team. When you consider both sides of the ball and everything, I think you still can make an argument that Chris Paul in his role is better than Russell Westbrook in his role because of his defense. Yeah, I can't see Oklahoma. I felt like Oklahoma City was overrated at the beginning of the season, and I still feel that way.
Right.
I guess that Paul George is the most efficient scorer on the team, other than, you know, Steven Adams, who's really not a scorer. He's just
a beast.
A finisher.
He's just a beast.
What's that?
He's just a beast.
Yeah. I mean, he's incredible. And, yeah. And I feel like a lot of the things you can say about Adams, you can say about Capella, too, where they're, you know, They get a lot of these pick and roll shots, and they're really awesome with it. And people are like, "Oh yeah, well, you know, look who's feeding them the ball." And it's like, "Yeah, but not anybody. It's not that easy to just like. You still have to execute."
Yeah.
And so I love both of those guys. So I'm not trying to knock Adams, and I actually think Adams has a case. He's definitely better than Carmelo Anthony.
Oh, no, he's their third best player. It's not even close.
Yeah, but I feel like Corey Brewer is just, he's already starting to regress. I think that we people made way too much out of his three-point shooting when he first got there.
People overreacting on Twitter? No.
Oh, not just on Twitter, on every game. Oh, he's shooting 40% from three. And I'm like, oh, come on.
That's not
good. You're using a five-game sample size over his entire career.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, I don't think Brewer's the answer. I mean, this team would have been really interesting had Roberson not gotten hurt. I'm just going to say that much. If he was healthy, this team would be very different and would be viewed very differently. I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
I just think
absolutely. I had Roberson as my defensive player of the year. Right. Until he went down. Yeah. I think Roberson and George together are really incredible because they just have that length. And this, I mean, wing defense matters so much in this league, and you know, they were really good together.
I would have had no problem picking them to upset the Rockets if they had Roberson. I would have no problem with that.
But that's neither here nor there because they don't have Roberson.
Yeah,
and they're just. They're not going to – right? Since Roberson went down, both Golden State and Houston are better than them on offense and defense. And I don't think Westbrook taking more shots is going to solve anything.
Right.
They did beat both Houston and Golden State in a couple of games. But if you look at Westbrook's efficiency in those games, he was shooting pretty well. And I just can't see him shooting well over four times in seven games against two good defenses.
It's gonna be interesting. I honestly just think it's gonna be interesting. I think they got a chance, better than some of the other teams. But besides the Thunder, who are you looking at in the West that could cause an upset?
Well, I agree with you on Utah.
Right.
The other team that I kind of think is like a real dark horse, but if they got the Warriors maybe in the first round, could really make a lot of problems, and that's the Pelicans.
Right.
I think just Anthony Davis is a particular animal that the Warriors are not equipped to handle defensively. As good as they are, you think, okay, Draymond Green or Kevin Durant should be able to, but Durant's not quite strong enough and Green's not quite long enough. I wouldn't pick them to win by any stretch,
right?
But I would be marginally surprised if it happened because he's just been a beast.
Yeah, I love AD and the way he's been playing. I just don't think they have enough around him. I know Drew Holiday's been great, and they've shot the ball pretty well. But I just don't buy it. Come playoff time, if those guys are going to be able to keep doing that. But that's he's definitely a matchup nightmare for just about every team.
I think Minnesota could be interesting if Jimmy Butler's back.
Yeah, I'm just more concerned Tibbs is going to have them out of gas by the time they get there.
He's going to get tipped up.
Yeah, I think all three. I think all those dudes are just going to be wore out by the time they get to the playoffs. You know, and whatnot, and then play. I mean, they're already playing playoff minutes.
Yeah. The other thing that I wonder about is, obviously, you can never just negate the Spurs until Greg Popovich retires.
I'm gonna commit blasphemy.
nowhere near as talented, especially without Kawhi. So let's even just say Kawhi doesn't come back. Maybe they're not enough to win, but what could be interesting is they could, Popovich could show the Warriors or Rockets, whoever they draw, if they drew one of those teams in the first or second round, they could show the Warriors or Rockets how to beat the other team.
Right. They could create the blueprint for the other team to follow. I'm going to commit blasphemy, I hope Spurs Nation can forgive me. Remember, I was one of you. I worked for a while. I contributed to a few playoff wins. So as much as a video guy does contribute to a playoff win, so before you guys come at me. But I think the Spurs are the team I want to play in the first round, even if they get Kawhi back, because he's not coming back 100% healthy, ready to run up and down the court and play playoff basketball. And even if they don't, I know Pop's the genius, and I've seen it, and I think he's the best coach in the game. I just don't think they got enough of the tools. It's going to take some incredible hot shooting from guys like Danny Green, Patty Mills. DeJounte Murray's going to have to take a leap in the playoffs for me to really feel like they got there, because I just don't think they can get there by just constantly pounding the ball into LaMarcus and kind of go from there. And it's not a slight on LaMarcus. He's been great as well, and all of that fun stuff. But I just don't think – I think this year, just without Kawhi throughout the whole season, I just don't see them having it. And if you told me at the start of the season they weren't going to have Kawhi, I would have had questions whether they would have made the playoffs.
But what if they get the sixth seed?
And play – I think Portland's going to be too tough for them. I think that's fun. I think they're going to have a hard time chasing – Lillard and CJ, around the court. I think Nurkic is okay, but I think the Blazers defensively have improved immensely this year, as we've all seen. I think what they'll do is what the Spurs will do against the Blazers is, really try to clamp down on Dame and CJ, and let guys like Aminu and Harkless, who are having great three-point shooting years, but generally aren't great three-point shooters, and have those guys beat them. I just don't know. I just don't think. I still think Portland kind of wins that series pretty easily, though.
Interesting. I think they could, using the same sort of defense they used to beat Houston last year. And I think if it comes down to a defensive struggle in the playoffs with rest and with time to prepare, I can see the Spurs getting past the Blazers. And again, I wouldn't pick them. So can I ask a question?
Always.
Okay, so here's my question. So let's say the top four are the Rockets, Warriors, Spurs, or Blazers, and Thunder.
All right.
Which of those, if one of those four teams doesn't come out of the second round, which one is? Make it to the second round. Yeah, which of those teams has the biggest chance of losing in the first round?
Yeah, I mean, even though I said they're a team that can probably make a lot of noise in the first round, you still have to wonder a little bit about the Thunder. I think it's between Portland and the Thunder, and that just kind of comes down to matchups. I think for Portland, I think San Antonio's a good matchup for them. I think they would have a hard time with Utah, so I wouldn't want to play Utah if I was Portland, just because Nurkic is going to have a hard time with Gobert, and they have enough on the wings to really defend those guys. I think if I'm going to just pick one, I'll just pick Portland, just because of what I said earlier about OKC, but I really think those would be the four teams that would move on. What about you, though?
Who's the team that the Thunder doesn't want to play?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody wants to play. I don't think anybody wants to play Utah.
I
think Utah's Utah's the scariest team. I wouldn't want to play them just because what they could do defensively.
They've been just on fire.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I think, if you're Oklahoma City, you put Paul George on Mitchell, and let me put this caveat out there: I know they're depending on a rookie and that's pretty difficult. And you put George on Mitchell, and then you just got to hope you could handle everything else behind you. I think the matchup of Gobert and Adams is like what Godzilla versus the Moth thing or whatever, Mothzilla or whatever the monster Godzilla would fight. You know, I think that would just be an amazing battle just between the two of them. I would sign up for a 7-game series to just watch the two of them play.
You know, Ricky Rubio is a really good defender.
Yeah, he's really good, and he's gonna. I think he'll struggle a little bit. I don't know what the numbers are with him versus Westbrook, but I think
that's why I was just wondering. I wonder what that looks like.
You know, the athleticism.
He seems like he could either be the type of guy that can really bother Westbrook, or that could just get owned by Westbrook.
Yeah,
I can see it going either way.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't have a memory in my head of how that's looked in the past. But you're right. I think it's one or the other. It's either going to be really good or really bad.
You know who the player most likely to go streaking during an NBA game?
Who would that be?
Gobert.
You got to leave us on a pun. That's the way to do it, Kelly. Have you been holding on to that one, or was that just off the top of the head?
No. I tweeted that one, actually, okay. A while back.
Okay.
But it's one of my classics.
It's a Kelly classic. Besides being a master of puns, plug your stuff, and let me get you out of here.
All right, yeah. So you can follow me at Kelly Scaletta, 1L2T's. I'm on FanRag. I'll be writing for the Step Back shortly here, and Bleacher Report, and Dime, and we'll see what else.
Anywhere else that has basketball writing, you've probably written for them.
Good chance.
Kelly, thank you so much, man, for coming on.
All right, thanks for having me.
Okay, so we're going to try a new segment here on The Jump Ball, just because people really enjoyed my Brett Brown story. At least I assumed they did. I had gotten a few tweets about it. So I'm going to end each podcast with a random story that I've experienced in my travels through the NBA. And I'm going to start out with this first one, which was the time I got to meet Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Was doing ball boy stuff for the Lakers. This is before I became a video coordinator, was kind of working my way up. And this story kind of pops into my head because I spent the past week with my father, and it goes back to a long time ago. My father had told me a story of how Kareem Abdul-Jabbar visited Libya, which is where we're from, when my father was a young man, and my family being a prominent family in Tripoli. We somehow randomly connected with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and my family was, you know, kind of giving him a tour, I guess, a little bit of Tripoli or whatnot. Listen, as a kid, I didn't believe my father, you know, and it's kind of silly that I didn't believe him or whatnot. He's pretty much a straight arrow guy, doesn't lie or anything. But I just thought, like, what the hell is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar going to be doing in Libya, of all places, in the 70s? This was pre-Gaddafi era and whatnot. So I just kind of was like, all right, this is a bit weird story. Like, you know, maybe it's just him trying to connect with me. He's not into sports. I am. And this is something he can connect with. Sure enough, I somehow end up in the Laker locker room, and it's just me and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I say hello to him and introduce myself, and, you know, he asks me where I'm from, and I'm like, oh, I'm from Libya. And he looks at me and says, oh, I've been to Libya. And immediately in my head, I'm like, okay, now this is kind of weird. And I say to him, I go like, well, that's kind of funny you say that. Like, my father has said that he has met you in Libya. I just never really believed him. And he's like, oh, well, what's your father's name? And I told him my father's name. I said, you know, and you know, we're, you know, the Dakhil family. And he says, oh, I know the Dakhil family. I spent some time with them in Tripoli. You know, how's everybody doing? Which then led to me immediately running outside of the locker room. I didn't handle this gracefully at all. Ran immediately outside the locker room, jumped on my cell phone, was like, Mom, Dad definitely met Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That really happened. She obviously didn't show as much excitement. She more was like, yeah, what, did you think he was lying? And I was like, well, yeah, I totally thought he was lying. That's my story. Hopefully there'll be some better ones coming down the pipeline. I've had some interesting experiences in my time and travels around the NBA and Australia. So that's it for Mo Story Time. That's it for the Jump Ball Podcast. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever else you go to listen to your podcast. Check out thejumpball.net. And if you can, and if you're interested, you could always support me on patreon.com. Have yourselves a good one.